podcast is brought to you by
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Do you crave fresh, hot donuts with an exotic twist? Then make a dash with teriyaki donuts. Our chefs fry fluffy donuts, then coat them in sweet, savory teriyaki sauce for a mouth-watering match made in heaven. Sink your teeth into our teriyaki bacon glaze. The salty umami bacon atop the sugar-glazed donut is a true delight. Or try our tropical tango teriyaki with tangy mango and pineapple drizzle. At Teriyaki Donuts, we offer adventurous flavors you won't find anywhere else. So satisfy your craving for these one-of-a-kind creations day or night. Teriyaki Donuts, where East meets gluttonous.
Open 24 hours.
I have written a TV show. I've written 8 episodes, all right, of a limited series. I've written all 8 episodes. I direct all 8 episodes. But, you know, that might be what I, like, start setting up next year.
I hope to do 2 more books. I plan on doing first play that I've just wrote, but I want to do a Hateful Eight later on stage. But I could very well write a stage version of Reservoir Dogs when I'm doing theater. I mean, the only one I can imagine where it would be another epic, where I need to outdo everything, is if I did a Kill Bill 3. Then I wrote 5 episodes of Bounty. But I could see myself writing a novelization for Reservoir Dogs. That would be cool.
Welcome all you Inglourious Basterds to another episode of Inglourious Blue Balls, a bastard's work left undone, where each month we will be taking a look at one of the many projects Quentin Tarantino's announced over his illustrious 30-plus year career that have never come to pass. I'm your host, the Reverend Scott K, and joining me on this daunting quest into the psyche of our hyperactive, motor-mouth, hip-firing lord and savior's laissez-faire approach to announcing projects is church acolyte, Friar Wheeler. Now, over the course of this journey, we will be delving into the backgrounds of these announced projects, speculating on why they never came to be, hypothesizing on what they could have been, and giving you our level of blue balls that these unrealized films have left us with. Next up on our docket is one of his announcements from the mid-2000s, his very own version of Casino Royale that would have starred Pierce Brosnan. But before we order a martini shaken, not stirred, and sexualize some women, it's my pleasure to welcome in my co-host, Friar Wheeler. Welcome, Friar Wheeler, and may Tarantino be with you always.
What's going on?
How do you like the new name, Friar? I mean, second episode now with the Friar. I think it's better than Monsignor. Monsignor does sound a little bit like you're going to touch children. And Friar's got that Friar Tuck, like, hey, Little John and Robin Hood run through the floors with you and Friar Tuck out there. Sounds, you know, it seems like you're going to help the people.
I feel more like the, when I hear that, I automatically think of the Disney Robin Hood with the little
That's
fox.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
The big ass chicken. And yeah. So
I think Friar Tuck was the bear, if I'm not mistaken, was the bear who wore
bear.
The robe.
The bear from Great Outdoors with the bald ass.
I'm just saying, right now, the way you're sitting, you have a black hoodie on, you are bald, and you are a stout gentleman. You are actually living the Friar life. It just is. Actually, I think you have to be bald and have a beard to be a part of the church. So
I'm becoming very unstout, though. I've been losing some weight lately.
Good.
So.
Well, I know. Yeah. I apologize, folks. That good came a little too energetic and was meant to be like a compliment. Hey, good for you. And not like, good, you fat shit. You should have lost that. Came across more like that, and that was not how it was intended. I do apologize if anyone thought I was fat shaming the Friar. We're not. Also, Friar Tuck could be like, you like fried food. Who cares? Whatever you want to do. Whatever you want to do. Now, Mr. Wheeler, there is some rumors that I know about maybe your podcasting world and your record label world. However, I'm not sure if you're ready to divulge them to our fans, as this will be on at the end of March and we're recording at the end of January. So we're 2 months in advance. The world could be burned to the ground by then. We don't know. However, is there anything new in the world of your podcasting and record label owning that the fans of the Blue Balls should know.
There is nothing going on with my record label at all. Pretty much, I don't think, all year. I think we're kind of taking it after the move here to Missouri. We're kind of taking it a little slow this year. I'm still doing con appearances. I was just at Days of the Dead in Atlanta over the weekend, which I got to spend some time with Mr. Alex Armbruster from one of your favorite films of the year, Thanksgiving. He played the John Carver character, and I got to rack his brain about the filming of it and everything and find out exactly what he filmed and everything. And I got a wonderful autographed poster from him. So, and I'm going to be meeting Eli Roth here in March. So I think I'm going to be taking a baseball bat to get that signed by the Baird.
Nice, the Baird Jew.
Yep, and it looks like the Splatterhouse podcast will be coming back with a different name and a new format. And there's a possibility of a sister podcast to the Church of Tarantino known as the Church of Carpenter podcast.
Yes.
Which will be completely dedicated to the wonderfulness of the John Carpenter underworld. So
looking forward to that.
Yep, starting to do plans and stuff for that. Getting guests lined up and, you know, everything going on that so that I get to, like, enter the realm of, you know, host so I can start dressing like you do for every episode, you know, with a little microphone.
I mean, I've got fucking They Live t-shirt on for you this evening. That's a little inside joke for those of you, but we've got a little some Lost, They Live.
Bring some Lost Boys.
So, all right, well, that's good.
Yeah, what's going on with you, Scott? We never talk about you.
Everything's going on.
This episode, we're co-hosting. So what's going on in your world?
Let's see. I've got three series devoted to Tarantino that drop every fucking month, it feels like. This will, when people are listening to this, I'm exactly less than 2 days away from dropping the seventh consecutive episode that started December 22nd and finally stops February 2nd. So I'll have about 2 weeks off till I can finally catch my breath. And I've decided to do 45 episodes for season three, because I'm a fucking glutton for punishment, while also doing two episodes a month for my other podcast, for the Cheeky Bastards, with my co-host Steve Smith. So apparently I have and no the fucking Willis. Life. That's two of them.
And then we've got our Big Lebowski podcast coming up, where all we do is discuss Lebowski. Is that still happening or what? No, but that's a good idea.
That's brand fucking what?
When this is all done, folks, when we're retired,
I did make a promise that I would not start on the podcast. However, as we record, people have already listened, but I was lucky enough again for my third guest appearance on one of my buddies' podcasts, the Asian Cinema Film Club. I recorded with them an episode for one of my favorite movies of all time, being Old Boy. So check
the
that
Spike
out.
Lee version.
Fuck you, the Spike Lee version. Fuck you. That gets you
that
shot in certain areas. Fucking Spike
Lee. Shit. Let's take garbage. 60 seconds and talk about how wonderful Old Boy is and the look on my face the first time I saw the fucking movie, where I didn't know anything going in. Mm-hmm. We threw the DVD and I didn't have a Blu-ray of it, and I just like. Oh, that the fight halfway through. I think we rewound it 3 to 4 times. Did you do that as well?
I had the luxury of being in film school in Florida, in Orlando at the time, and it came out in one of the art theaters there, and I got to see it on screen.
Oh.
And I remember being absolutely fucking blown away. I've never, even to this day, as much as I love everything Tarantino does, I still think maybe the greatest, the ballsiest story ever told is Old Boy. And that's why the new one, that's why the remake is terrible, because I always said they could never remake this story in America. They watered it down. They sanitized it. That story at the end, once you realize the twists and turns and the reveal, and then the second reveal, the decision that I won't say more for those who have never seen it, at the end, blows your fucking mind. And I think sometimes South Korean films, I think they, American films, we could learn a lot from them, because they tell realistic, real life, tough stories to fucking, you have to go, holy shit. Like, you have to grapple with some of the shit.
Where we stop in America in the cinema is where they take it the next step and then go another step.
Where Tarantino left the door closed to find out where the gimp was, Old Boy said, look, here's a gimp, and there's more. Like, there's more inside this trunk. And funny, they both have trunks. That is actually synergetic.
This one here, like, it surprised me beyond even what Parasite did. Like, it's Parasite's mild compared to Old Boy.
And yes.
If anyone
absolutely.
Here has not seen Old Boy, go find the Korean version of it. Don't watch the Spike
Only
Lee.
Watch. And it's actually on Netflix finally, because Neon bought it. So it's actually has its American debut. It's streaming on Netflix right now.
I was so jealous when you're like, oh, I got to go talk about that. I'm like, fuck, man, nobody ever called.
I fucking love it. Oh, it's one of my favorites of all time. It is unbelievable. And obviously, we're not talking about it in 2024, but last year in August, Neon re-released it into the theaters for its 20th anniversary, and I had the pleasure of seeing it as well.
So I was living here and it didn't play.
Anywho, we're not here to talk about that, folks. However, we do have a question I do have for Sean. Now, we're about to talk about Casino Royale, which is a part of the James Bond 007 Shaken Not Stirred, Touch a Lady on Her Ass, and Get Away With It franchise. Now, obviously, we know there was another franchise that we will be talking about later in this series, which is Star Trek. So we all know that one of the movies originally talked about was Star Trek. So, leaving Star Trek out of the equation, what other franchise would you like to have seen Tarantino have the option to make a film for?
Oh, shit.
If that had worked out in a world where he didn't just do 10 fucking movies, who would you like to have seen him take a property and actually get a shot at it?
Okay, so this would have been post-Death Proof, but I would have loved to see him take a bite out of the Mad Max.
Ooh,
just yes. Based on his willingness to not use CGI, practical yes. effects, storytelling, casting. There's not very much talking in it, but... You know,
yes,
yeah, that just off the top of my head, that's one that I think that he would excel at, and I know that he loves as well, or at least I know he likes the back end of the two. I don't, Fury Road, I don't know about. I think he said some stuff that it was a really good action film, but yeah, those would be the ones. You?
Well, I can't say the one because I just thought of it because we're also going to talk about it, but because he got me excited about him thinking about doing Rambo, an actual true version. So we'll talk about that later.
I forgot about that.
Oh, one. A property. How about this? Since we're talking, you were just talking about your boy, Mr. Carpenter. If he could go back and redo and get rid of what Abomination Escape from L.A. is, and he could do his own version, I would love to see what Tarantino would do with his own version of Escape from Whatever with Snake Plissken, or just a further story of Snake Plissken post Escape from L.A. Now, I know technically it's not a property in the terms that we're talking about, but that's in his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Or, you know what, maybe even a Halloween, like what he would have done with a Halloween as opposed to what we got from the other people. You know, like what? See what he could have done with the Halloween. He wouldn't need to do a trilogy. He would have done it in one time. I would like to see that.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, he did make a Western version of The Thing. So
yep. Oh yeah. Well, yeah. We got that. Like, that's beautiful.
You know,
yeah.
We know he's a huge fan because that was the whole purpose behind the John Carpenter. Mm-hmm. Without Carpenter, I don't think you have Tarantino in the way that you do. You can't. I think somebody said it. You know, earlier in one of the posts that you can't have Tarantino or you can't like Tarantino without liking John Carpenter as
100%.
Well.
100%. Yep. All right, my friends. It's time to pour yourself a cognac. Open a box of Havanas and strap yourselves in as we embark on our journey through the gargantuan accumulation of blue ball-inducing project announcements spewed from the mouth of our Lord and Savior, Mr. Quentin Tarantino. Our next stop on this arduous expedition is one of his declarations from the mid-2000s, that being Casino Royale. Now, shortly after the release of Pulp Fiction, and contrary to what I said in the opening about it being an announcement in the mid-2000s, Tarantino went on record stating that he wanted to do his own version of the first book ever written by Ian Fleming, which is also the first book to star the now world-renowned character of James Bond, that book being Casino Royale. Now, his version of the film would take place during the 1960s at the height of the Cold War. After initially moving on from the project due to an inability to secure the rights to adapt the novel into a film, Tarantino's fervor for the project was reignited in 2004 post his Kill Bill success. And with Pierce Brosnan's help, he pushed Bond producers to let him helm the project. In a spring 2023 interview with Deadline, Tarantino revealed that his plans for the movie would have cast a new Bond, not Brosnan, as originally reported, who had also played in four Bond films in that era of the Bonds. However, during a TV interview with Jonathan Ross in 2010, Quentin originally said for his version of Casino Royale, he would have cast Pierce in the role. Clearly, he must have changed his tune over the decades since. Tarantino's version of this film would have been a one-off and not part of the series of Bond films like the way they have been made since literally the inception of the Bond films. Quentin wanted his movie to be more of a retro spy thriller than an action-packed one. The film would have been the direct sequel to George Lazenby's On Her Majesty's Secret Service. In that film, Bond's wife Tracy is killed. QT was even willing to play by Eon's rules and set the film in the modern day if they had required that, as the Daniel Craig starring one eventually was. Now, besides Brosnan playing the titular role, other casting rumors had Uma Thurman playing Vesper Lynd and Samuel L. Jackson as Felix Leiter. Friar Wheeler, is there anything from this announcement that I've missed that you have dug up that my old eyes did not come across?
Oh, I had read that it was supposed to be a one and done, which is like the Casino Royale in 1967, yes, or Never Say Never Again in 1983, which was, that one was directed by Irvin Kershner, who is famous for Empire Strikes Back, which also starred Sean Connery as Bond after a 12-year absence. Everything that you found is almost exactly what I found.
Yeah, well, I am the referent.
the main thing, so Tarantino's proposed film would have been in, it could have been in direct competition with GoldenEye, which made $350 million at the box office, which also happened in 1983 when Octopussy came out first and earned $187 million against the Never Say Never Again, which also made $160 million. I mean, it only beat it out, I think, because it came out earlier, the obviously the Sean Connery thing, but I know that they don't like competition with the James Bond stuff anymore after that.
No, they don't. Not the Broccoli's.
And they have some very, very strict rules that you have to adhere to do the film. And as soon as I heard about this, I'm like, how's he going to get away with this shit? Because he's going to push it as far as he can. And, you know, we'll never find out.
Well, the things that the Bond films have never had is an R rating. They do not have a lot of swearing in them. And there's never been full frontal nudity in any Bond film, even though they are very sexually charged, innuendo-filled movies, especially the earlier ones. I'm talking, even Pierce Brosnan's one started to pull back on that, maybe even Timothy Dalton's a little bit, but the Pussy Galore names and all the funny names that they came up with for the Austin Powers films, you know, that they, you know, I want to hump a lot, excuse me?
I like those films, so.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, they pulled back on those kind of innuendos, in-your-face, sexualized names. So, you know, we were already headed in that direction. But regardless of that, there still has never been frontal nudity. As many Bond women as there are, and as many times as they're kind of naked, but they're never fully naked.
Yeah.
And in fairness, we have not, and thankfully, we have not seen full frontal Bond either. So we have not seen his 007. So that's always a, or 001. Would that be a 001? We have not seen his
001. There is no penny pussy sales going on in the James Bond series. So
no.
We got Bond pussy.
Yeah. Oh, yes, but we have not. So the interesting thing is that it's weird that Tarantino said Brosnan wouldn't have been his star, but, and that's like, obviously, like we're saying, we're talking 20 years since he was pushing for it with him, 13 years since he kind of talked about it on that British television show. And so now, you know, obviously last year he comes out and, you know, he's being asked all these questions. And what we're going to find might help with our show here is that as he's now closing in on the final film, whatever that ends up being, we're going to get a little bit more information, I think, on some of the stuff that has been missed, some of the missed out opportunities, because now they're closing in. He might start talking more, as obviously, I mean, he started talking about this again in 2023. I mean, I would love to know more about what we talked about last month being his untitled medieval movie, as that seems to be a very interesting, but we don't even know if it's a real, it's rumored or fact that he was ever going to do a medieval film. But also, he recently was discussing our very first one being the Vega Brothers a couple years ago when he's talking about it could possibly be a novel. So he's starting to give up more information, which isn't, you know, usually he makes an announcement and then it's like fucking wildfire and then it just disappears, as that's why this show is here. But now he's starting to almost like an old man telling his grandkids how things were. You know what I mean? Like, when grandpa first came back from Vietnam, he didn't want to talk about all the horrors. But now he's about to die. He's like, yeah, I used to throw grenades into open schools, you know, exactly. Graham's starting to give us a few more stories now that he's aged. So we should learn more. It's weird that he kind of is decided that Pierce Brosnan wasn't going to be it when all signs point to the only person he had in mind for it and the one man who was actually pushing to do his fifth film with Tarantino was Pierce Brosnan.
So Pulp Fiction came out in 94, GoldenEye came out in 95. So if he was talking to them about it, he may not have had the idea to cast.
Well, it was in 2003, 2004 is when he was really pushing it with Pierce Brosnan's help.
But in 95, he didn't know probably that they were going to like when he was talking about it, he may not have known about the Pierce Brosnan thing, because I'd found a quote in, I think, two interviews that he likes Pierce Brosnan as James Bond, but he did not like the movies that Brosnan was in.
Yes, he thinks Pierce Brosnan is the best Bond.
Yep.
We'll discuss in a minute. I disagree.
No, I don't agree either.
And I can't fault him for this, because I was doing the research, I was typing this stuff, I was thinking, stop being such a fucking curmudgeon. But then I was thinking back, like, you know what? I hold on to things Steve does, like we all do. We all have certain movies or certain time frames that we love and we don't want to change. We don't want to see those change. Nope. So he loved the Bonds of the 60s. So be it. He was a kid. I don't see why he wouldn't. Yep. To me, I prefer the newer Bonds. But again, that's just my preference. He liked the older Bonds. And being that he's not an action director, and honestly, as we'll talk in the speculation, but I don't know that his Bond would have played well in the new world of Bonds, especially when he was trying to push it, because there was a couple other movies that changed where Bond would go and how it would change, and it had to in order to stay relevant. Yep. So his movie, while it would have been maybe been a great one-off, might have actually been successful, but also a killer of the Bond franchise in the same respect. But Pierce Brosnan had just finished his last movie of Bond in 02. So in 04, he was trying to get a fifth one, and he was trying to help push, and they did not want to go that way. And so as we will discuss in a second here, we'll find out why it didn't happen, and then we'll find out what did become. And so we're going to jump into that right now. Now, the biggest and only reason this film did not get made by Mr. Tarantino was the fucking Broccoli family, who owned the rights to every single piece of work ever written by Ian Fleming. Now, a few years prior, and this is how Tarantino realized he was up against it, and this is why he paused in the 90s, is he was going to approach the Fleming family to purchase the rights to Casino Royale. However, the Broccoli family, a few years earlier, figured out that someone actually might try this, so they went and wrote a big old check and bought the rights to everything Ian Fleming has ever written, to include if he wrote a goddamn calendar, they own the rights to that calendar. And if you want to film their calendar, you've got to talk to the fucking Broccolis. Because he did not own the rights, he quickly had to kind of walk away for it. So Casino Royale was now owned by the Broccolis, and he would now have to go through them if he wanted to make it. Other factors, as he tried to pursue it in the 2000s, about 10 years later, Pierce Brosnan's age and the hefty sum he was being paid to play Bond really kind of didn't sit well now with the studios. They were ready to move on from him. To put this in terms of American sport fans, football contracts usually start off very low in numbers when they're rookies, and they back end these contracts. Well, this was the back end of his contract. He started off playing the role, I think, for around somewhere between $2 to $4 million, and by the time he was done with his fourth, he was making somewhere between $14 and $18 million to play Bond, and they didn't want to pay that hefty price anymore. It's easier to find a brand new person and start over and start paying them cheaply. Plus his age. I mean, look it. Although he was at the right age of the story, he was in his 40s, so he was actually at the right age to play the Bond that is in the book, who is an older Bond who's just lost his wife and then is kind of falls for Vesper, and the rest is kind of history. But that was a huge reason that he did not get a chance to kind of move it in. Also, there's the factor that Tarantino uses extreme violence, foul language, and out of left field situations in his films, which, if you know Tarantino, he wants to do that. He's going to make his Bond, the Bond villains, actually more of a villain like we get from, could be Pulp Fiction, could be Hans like Landa. Our Gip moment, it could be a Hans Landa, it could be a Calvin Candy. We could get a real treacherous person who really puts the hot pokers to Mr. Bond. However, as we talk in a little bit, that may be why some of these things that happened in the Bond that we got came to light, because of maybe what Tarantino might have been. Yeah. It's also why the QT is the reason the film got made at all. The Broccoli family believed the book was unfilmable until Mr. Tarantino showed interest, and that interest piqued the Bond fan base, and their interest in turn piqued the Broccolis. Some feel Casino Royale is the best Bond film of the franchise. I think it's the second best. For me, it's Skyfall. Potato, potato. Doesn't matter to me. Whichever you like, feel free. Now, while many in both the Tarantino fandom and Bond fandom alike would have loved to see Tarantino's version made, in hindsight, I believe QT's version would have stunted the growth and overall success of the franchise, as it would have been a one-off. We never would have gotten Craig as Bond, who in my opinion is the best Bond of the franchise. His Bond films have been the most successful and some of the best of the franchise, and we never would have gotten, as I just aforementioned, Skyfall, which is not only the best Bond film, but also one of the best films ever made, again, in my opinion. So of all the missed opportunities we will cover over the course of this series, not having Tarantino's version of the film seems to have been the proper course of action. And I'll explain. Bond was still doing the old swarmy, sexualizing women, I'm kind of a dapper dude, Ocean's 11 Rat Pack feel to him. Doug Liman and Matt Damon changed the way you started to make spy thrillers when they brought up Bourne. Once Jason Bourne was born, he came out in 02, and then a second film in 04. When this Bond film came out, also at the same time, J.J. Abrams was hired on to helm Mission Impossible, and they brought Mission Impossible 3, which is, in my opinion, one of the best Mission Impossible films of the franchise. We went from a lot of talking, thinking man's spy game to more of a blunt force object, more of a realistic, to the times, spy kind of craft. So while Tarantino's would have been a cool throwback to the 60s, it would have been a probably amazing film. It wouldn't have helped propel the Bond franchise further. And probably, who knows if Daniel Craig still plays him? Who knows if that even happens? So while it would have been cool as a fan to see it, the films we got from it because of Doug Liman and because of what Matt Damon were doing with Bourne and then what now Mission Impossible and now what the Bond films became, and then you get John Wick. It's like a lot of things shifted in a different direction, and I think somewhat for the better, because I find these Bond films way more, and even the bad ones of his five are way more entertaining and realistic, and even the Bond is realistic. Even Daniel Craig's portrayal of Bond is more realistic than what we would have gotten. So I will now pass it back to the Friar. Is there anything I left out that you came upon for why it never came to fruition, and also your thoughts on what I've just said?
So I agree with, I'd say, 99% of everything you just said. My favorite is Skyfall. Casino Royale is a very close second. I also agree that after the Pierce Brosnan films that they really needed to do something to up it. I mean, I'm not a huge Bond fan. I never have been. It's just never struck a chord with me until I saw the Daniel Craig films. I tried watching the Roger Moore marathons on TBS growing up, and I never got past my overall dislike of the films. I actually like Roger Moore way more in the Cannonball Run movie, where he's playing a self-parody of himself who's playing a self-parody of a James Bond character. So, like, that's how I feel about
it. It's very, very meta.
It's fucking true, but, like, I love him in that film because, you know, every scene he's got a different chick in the car and half the shit doesn't work on the car and everything. It's just a complete parody of it. And that's what I always think about when I thought about these movies, is me trying to watch, you know, the one where he's skiing through the whole fucking movie and, you know, all that stuff. Like when I was a kid and I'm like, I just didn't understand it. But I really, like, when I heard about this, I was like, you know, like I heard about the rumors right away about Casino Royale after Pulp Fiction and then obviously after Kill Bill. And I got kind of excited about it. But then, like, also, they're not known for hiring good directors for these Bond movies. They're known for just hiring people that don't have a vision of their own and are going to follow directions, because the Broccoli family owns it all, but they license it to a production company known as Eon Films. And I think that they only make fucking James Bond movies. And I think that because of the rights issues and the control that everyone has to keep over this franchise, which is one of the most protected franchises next to Star Wars, I think that QT saw that. And
maybe more so.
Yeah, I think that he saw that and he knew that he would not get his usual final cut or his free reign with the material. That's not printed anywhere. That's just how I feel about it. I think when you and I were talking before, I mentioned that I had found some information like that Pierce Brosnan wasn't allowed to wear a tuxedo in another movie while he was signed on to do Bond, because they didn't want anything to even look like Bond if he's going to play in another movie. I think it was Thomas Crown Affair, where he's, instead of wearing a tux, he's wearing some other shit through the whole movie and everything. It's just, it's the way that they are. And he later on said that Eon stole some of his ideas for the film, which I watched the film recently and I could see where the Vesper, the character dying, the black and white opening, the thing with James Bond getting hit in the nuts over and over again with that.
Yes, that's what I was saying. The torture sequence, there's not been a scene like that in a prior Bond. I mean, they're always funny. Do you expect me to talk? You know, I expect you to die, Mr. Bond, that kind of thing where they always get away. But he takes a fucking couple of nice shots in us. And I think Lashif is not a character. It's not a funny little odd job, squirrely like little character. He is a real on villain, spectacularly played by Mads Mikkelsen. And like we talked about, without Mads Mikkelsen in this role, we don't get one of our favorite TV shows, and I always forget to mention it, but Hannibal.
Hannibal's amazing.
That is a fucking amazing show.
If I won
show.
The lottery tomorrow, I would give them the money to do season 4.
Oh, me too. Mads Mikkelsen does to the Hannibal role, which is unexpected, what Heath Ledger did for the Joker role. You or think no Phoenix. One's passing Nicholson or Hopkins, and you go, Jesus Christ, they may be the two better versions of that character.
I actually prefer to the Anthony Hopkins character. It's like a fucking snake sitting there every scene just waiting.
But you know what?
He never does
in fairness, I think it's because we know about Hopkins and what it becomes. Yeah. So I think that's why it makes it delicious, because we have that knowledge going in of who he is and becomes.
I was such a big fan of the books. And like when you read the books now, it used to be Anthony Hopkins. And then that show come out. I don't envision Anthony Hopkins anymore. Anthony Hopkins is just fucking gone. It's been erased from my mind, like Sharon Tate dying.
No,
it's gone. You know, like, so that show's amazing. Any listener that has not watched it, I think it's fucking on Netflix.
Oh,
it's
one of the
so
best.
Good. And
I think it's on Hulu now too, because it's a part of the... It's amazing. That was on television about 10 years ago.
And when Madge shows up in Casino Royale, I remember watching it the first time I was in the theater, and I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? This guy just, he has the
look. Little blood tear.
He's got the look. The way he delivers his lines, he's got that little bit of an accent that you can't quite place. He's amazing in the film, and I think if Tarantino gets this, I don't see him casting Mads Mikkelsen in it, which robs us of Hannibal and every other show, which, I mean, he was just in the new Indiana Jones, which he fucking was great in.
He's in Rogue One, which is great.
Yeah, like everything he's in, he's always the best part.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
And it could have, I keep saying it on these podcasts, but like, if he does that Casino Royale, we may not get Jackie Brown. We may not get Grindhouse at all, Planet Terror, or Death Proof.
We don't get Grindhouse because it's coming out afterwards.
Yeah, we don't get either one of those.
So. Yeah, we don't get Death Proof. Death Proof doesn't happen.
Yep, or Planet Terror, maybe. So, I mean, we don't get the whole experience, we don't get Thanksgiving, we don't get Machete, we don't get Hobo with a Shotgun, we don't get any of those other movies because of the fake trailers. Yeah, it is what it is.
Now that we know what has happened with the Bond franchise since, and what Daniel Craig was able to do with it with his five films, and I always say, like, I think the odd ones are the best ones, the even ones are, okay, like...
1, 3, and 5.
In Tarantino's mind, Spectre is the most Bond film that there is, but whatever. Again, Casino Royale and Skyfall. If anything, we just got those two films from Daniel Craig.
Quantum of Solace. They almost lost me right away.
Quantum of Solace wasn't great. Then they come back with Skyfall.
Like I said, they don't normally hire these big, directors, and they brought in Sam Mendes. And if you make a note, it made double what Quantum of Solace did at the box office because the movie's that fucking good. But it also had Javier Bardem just chewing.
Yes, Javier Bardem was amazing. You felt the sheaf was good until you see him. And some of the best Bond theme songs as well. We got Chris Cornell did Casino Royales. Yep. And then Adele won the Academy Award and a Grammy for her Skyfall. And I know you're not a fan.
Who did Quantum of Solace? The Jack White.
I can tell you did Quantum of Solace. Jack White and I actually liked it. I thought it was pretty good. After that, I don't know the other two. I can't remember the other two. I don't remember who did Spectre, and I don't know who just did the last one. As a Tarantino fan, love the man, would love to have seen what this could have been, but I am actually happy that we did not get this film from him, because the films that followed, much better from him, and the actual Bond franchise, I feel, went in the right direction. So they made the right decision. They really did make the right decision.
We sit here and talk about this stuff because it's like, it'd be so fucking great if he did this movie, and then you start thinking about all the things that don't happen if he doesn't.
Yes, the ripple effect, the old butterfly effect. Like, it happens if we don't get it.
Mads Mikkelsen, his career alone, like the movies he's been in, like I wouldn't, it'd be, so.
Maybe he still has a trajectory, but there's no way he's in Hannibal. There's no way he's in half these things.
But I don't see him being as big as he is now, where he shows up in a movie and it's just like, Leo, I'm just, hold on. He's there. So he commands 100%. A presence. And he did that from the minute he walked on that set. And when he died, I was actually like, fuck, I was hoping he's going to be in this a little bit longer.
But that was what was exciting about it, is it showed that they were actually, that's the other thing, is this Bond actually build. There's an arc to the five films. There is a continual storyline through it. So
he has an arc. It's just not about pussy and, saving the world.
It's funny because one of the people who ends up being one of the big players ends up being our boy from Inglourious Basterds and from Django Unchained.
Bond's a fucking one.
But do we get him as an actor if Tarantino goes the route of Bond? Do we ever see him? Do we get Inglourious Basterds? Because he ends up being in Spectre, and he ends up being in the last film as he's part of the Spectre organization. Do we get Christoph Waltz? We don't. I don't think we do.
It's so fun.
You know what I mean? Like, there's such a ripple effect. There's so many things that may or may not happen.
This is what happens when Biff gets a hold of the time machine and goes back with the fucking almanac.
Fucking Biff, cocksucker.
It's old.
This is why we need Jean-Claude Van Damme and his Time Cop. I
liked that movie, though. I saw it in theaters. I was like, this isn't too bad. Then I watched it a few years ago.
That came out the same year as Paul.
I watched it a few years later. I'm like, this sucks. So, yeah. I liked it when I saw it.
It's time for some hypotheticals.
Let's hypothesize and speculate what this Tarantino film might have looked like. Now, obviously, for possible cast, I have, and I'll get Friar Wheeler's in a second, but obviously Bond is going to be played by Pierce Brosnan. That's just who it was going to be. Uma Thurman, I think, would have been a pretty good Vesper. I don't have a problem with that. Samuel Jackson stepping in for the CIA agent Leiter. I've added three names in here, and again, I didn't want to go through them all. I think Michael Fassbender might have played the Lashif character, possibly. I think maybe Tim Roth would have been our Q or something else in the film, because we don't really have a Q. Q doesn't show up until either Quantum or Skyfall. We don't add that character in this series. And I actually think, even though Dame Judi Dench is in the role of M, I actually think, since we just talked recently last month about Helen Mirren, I think Dame Helen Mirren actually plays his M in this series. And look, I don't want to say these two ladies are interchangeable, but they kind of are. They're both amazing actresses, English actresses of a certain age in their twilight years, who are spectacular actresses. And either one, Judi Dench is fucking amazing in it as it is, but Helen Mirren will be just as fucking good in that role. Yeah. I just truly believe the two of them could act the fuck out of that role as they already do. So that's who I have. Friar Wheeler, who did you have as your possible cast list?
So who did you name for Bond if it's not Pierce Brosnan, just out of curiosity? Who is your other idea?
I didn't have one because he said Pierce. So mid-2000s, but he wants to cast somebody in their 40s, so they have to be older, because he wanted to be, and that's why he wanted Pierce originally, because Pierce was the age of the actual character in the book, in the actual story. Who's 70 right now could have done it? They have to be English too, because they're
supposed to be in their 40s on screen. I thought Tim Roth could have possibly maybe
Ben Bond
wouldn't have been a big thing. For Lashif, I thought Michael Keaton would be. I don't know about the Michael accent Keaton, and shit, but it depends on where you want to make him. Yeah. Or Gary Oldman would have been amazing at it. Were the two that I thought of. And for M, I my first was Helen Mirren, and then I really liked the Judi Dench one.
So do I. I kind of,
she's
amazing.
Scary in it. Like, she doesn't put up for any shit, and she's putting up with these guys. Like,
she doesn't put
I'll
up with Bond. Shots. Yeah. Yes. If you break into my house again, I'll kill you. I love that.
And in a Tarantino world, if you're going to do it, I could almost see him casting Pam Grier as M, but I don't know if she can do the accent.
The Bond fans would lose their fucking mind.
I was thinking
mind.
About it, and I'm just like, you're under arrest, sugar. Be great.
A sassy black woman said
it. I was thinking about it. You could totally have Uma Thurman or Bridget Fonda as, you know, because obviously he was looking at Bridget Fonda, and Fonda was really hot in the, you know, the 95, 94, you know, all the way to 1999, I'd say, with her career. The other one I could see, because of the Bruce Willis thing, I could see him casting Demi Moore as something in that role as for the Vesper. The gadget guy, he may have put him in the movie more. My pick for that would have been Steve Buscemi, because he'd be fucking amazing as the gadget guy. And then for the Rene character, when he gets over there, the older contact in Montenegro that's kind of fucking with him a little bit, Keitel or Robert Forster. And then I picked Sam Jackson as well. And who does Quentin Tarantino hire to do the theme song for his Bond film? Madonna.
Yeah. Does he? Or does he have his 2004, own?
2004, man. He'd hire Madonna to do the theme song with Ennio Morricone.
Or does he just make his own?
I don't know. I don't think he would. I think that's something that's like ironclad in there. The songs are famous.
Yeah, it is. So someone like,
if he's going to pick somebody, be Madonna, and the song would be about dicks. So how many? A lot.
How many dicks is that? How many dicks you got? How many dicks you got?
I asked my brother too. I'm like, who would you pick? Who would he pick? Madonna. Both of us, same time. Madonna. So
never know. Well, maybe we'll never know. You never know.
Casino Royale. She's got foam cones. That's Pauly Shore. She's got the foam cones and all, buddy.
Now, the impact this film might have had on his filmography. Not only would this be a standalone in the Bond franchise, but it would also be a complete outlier in the Tarantino verse, as Tarantino wouldn't be able to sneak any of his family links or fake products into this film due to, like you're saying, what Eon requires. There would be no Royale with cheeses. Yep. There would be no, you know, we wouldn't get any Kahuna burgers. There's no red apples. There's none of that. That is all pulled out of his.
When you watch CSI, there's what, 15 seasons of it? Every one of them seems the same, except for the Gravedigger episode that he does.
Yes.
They come in and the fuckers are playing board game. They're playing the Dukes of Hazzard.
But he's allowed to. The same thing with the ER episode he did. He's allowed to because they know who they're hiring. But Eon, this is a franchise he's coming into. So he would have to play by their rules if he wants to make it. So he's leaving this stuff out. So it's not even a part of the Tarantino-verse.
Yeah.
It is an outlier. It is one of those films, like probably Star Trek might have been as well. Unless the Star Trek people, and we'll get into that, let him bring in his stuff because of he might be able to play with them more because what he was, well, when we get into that episode, what his thought was, like the 1920s gangster film, like of that one episode that they had in Star Trek, kind of his take on it, he might have been able to work in some of his props, like especially Red Apple, because it's like an 1867 tobacco product or whatever. He might have been able to, because they're obviously traveling back in time, so he could have actually added that, and they may have let him. But not so much with Eon or the Broccoli's. They are not allowing any
of
that. And
the profanity. I mean, you're not getting Marvin shot in the face in a fucking Casino Royale directed by Tarantino. It's not happening.
No.
His surprising violence and stuff, which I will say that I didn't remember all of the... There's a few scenes in here where, like, when he shoots the bomb guy at the beginning after all the parkour stuff. I didn't see that coming the first time. And I was like, that's something that I could see him going, he needs to shoot these people. Like, he's pussyfooting around through all these other movies, and I could see where he would want to do that.
Yeah, but they're not running around in this. This is more 60s spy retro. We're not running around. We're not chasing a bomb guy.
Sneaking in, lowering from the ceiling.
Yeah,
it's lots of fucking rope.
It's the Russians are the villains in this one. Like, there's Russians because this is a Cold War. Yeah, rope. Rope. Yeah, Charlie plenty Brown's of rope. Break rope. Fucking
fuck
Jesus
you,
Christ! How dare you bring up the Boondock Saints, you cocksucker?
That's one of my favorite fucking movies from that era. That just
I'm sure it is. You
fucking rope. Well, you and your fucking rope.
Sit down and shut up, you big bull. Fuck. I'm just kidding. Now, that being said, a successful Bond film would have put QT on a higher plane of existence than he already was, but might have also changed the trajectory, as we said, of his career, and we might not have gotten a lot of great films that we did. As you said, Jackie Brown through Once Upon a Time. All of those films might never have come to pass depending on when he actually did the film. So there's a lot of films in there. There's a lot of some of his best might not get made. You know, like one of mine behind me, as I say all the time, my Hateful Eight poster. Well, might not get hit to Hateful Eight. If he does this after Pulp, we might not get Kill Bill. We don't get Inglourious, maybe. Maybe not Django. Maybe not Once Upon. Like, who knows where this takes him and what kind of filmmaker it makes him. If he'd had the ability to buy the rights himself and didn't have to worry about all that shit, we would have got probably an amazing film that would have lived in his Tarantino verse. However, because we don't, or because he couldn't buy that, it'll never live the way it was, you know, probably thought to be. So again, as I said earlier, I think this was the right decision by all involved. All involved. Everyone went their separate ways, and we got amazing films from Tarantino, and the Bond franchise was much more successful. And sometimes, you know, sometimes every now and again, fate extends its hand.
Well, I think that his pursuit in this material is the reason that we got the Bonds that we did later on.
100%. And he has said he says a lot. We know this. That's why we're having this podcast. But he's kind of like upset that no one's thanked him for the fact that those Bonds got met, that movie got made. I read it. He's kind of pissed off that he wasn't given some kind of credit for getting that film made, which he's right. But at the same time,
I would like to wholeheartedly, from the Church of Tarantino podcast and the Blue Balls podcast, I would like to thank Quentin Tarantino for his pursuit of the Casino Royale book and script. And the Bond movies that we got as a result of his pursuit of it.
Yes.
Seriously, from the bottom of my heart, I'd like to thank you because I love those movies and I love his other movies. So there's me kissing his ass if he actually ever listens to those.
So you could do that. And I will then say thank you to two other things. Thank you, Doug Liman / Matt Damon, for changing the way spy movies were made with your Bourne four, how many, whatever film, four, how five. Many, but there was two came out. Prior to this film coming out, I enjoyed that as well. So I thank them for changing the game because now Mission Impossible and these Bonds are a lot better because of it. And also, thank you to Eon for not hiring Tarantino because otherwise we don't get Daniel Craig, we don't get Mads Mikkelsen, we don't get those two guys playing probably the best Bond. And also, Mads Mikkelsen becomes an international star, not just from his home country. I believe he's Dutch, maybe?
Yeah.
I forget where he's from. I apologize if I get it wrong, but I wasn't researching a Mads Mikkelsen.
No, we also
podcast.
Don't get the heavier Bardeem post, you know.
No, we don't. Yeah, no, we don't get him. Like, exactly.
They
exactly.
finally took the fucking mop off his head and let him go. And with the,
yes,
it's very distracting. Yes. I love the movie, but it's for you know. So yes. Yeah, we don't.
And we don't get the Adele song. We don't get the amazing song from Chris Cornell. We don't get some of these things that happen. So these things all came together in a universe that helped Tarantino help to get them to want to do the story, but they went their own way. We got the right directors for it. We got the right things for it. It was also a change in how they're going to do it. So Tarantino's version was never going to get done anyways. I think the world in this circumstance worked out for the best. And that's that. Now it is time for our level of blue balls. As I've said before, for each project that we discuss, we are going to rate the level of blue balls they have given us because they were never realized. And they're based, again, on these five shades of blue that I think everyone should now use. I need to get a color-coded chart that we can start handing out. And they are, once again, baby blue for some mild discomfort. Sky blue balls are some troubling tingling going on. Royal blue balls is wince-inducing throbbing. You get navy blue balls, and there's some agonizing pelvic ache. And then those of us with midnight blue balls must ejaculate or die from misery. So, once again, Mr. Fryer, what is your level of blue balls for Casino Royale that never came to be? And I know that is a pun inside itself.
I have royalty blue balls as a number three.
All right.
I would love to see him dip his toes into something like this. But again, his timing and his pursuit of this film could have robbed us of a lot of future projects and careers, like such as the Mads Mikkelsen that we were talking about. I also don't see how his style of writing would have adapted its way into the Ian Fleming novels, the other movies. You know, it's supposed to be a standalone film, but there's still things that you expect when you go to a fucking Bond film. And I think that, you know, the rules that would have been placed on him, the man does not like rules. He's got a problem with authority, which I'm hoping you're going to do. You're going to do one of your little AI things on Tarantino along the way here, you know, just because it's going to come up. He's got a problem with authority. But then I saw the Casino Royale film, and I love the film, and I picked things out of the film that were, you know, could have been Tarantino ideas at the time, which I probably wasn't even thinking about. But I watched it the other night. I'm like, this is just as fucking good. I think I've seen it maybe four times. And you know, and then you got Tyrone sitting there from Snatch as well, playing cards with him. And I think I'll have one of those as well.
You silly bastard.
It was a funny angle. I couldn't see the cards. You know, so like, yeah.
Stop that dog from dribbling on my seats.
Don't snatch. Yeah. So like, I understand why he didn't do it. And like, it's the idea that of all the things he could have done with it. But I don't think, God, I hate to say this. I don't think he would have made a better film than they did. Which we haven't really said.
Yes. Yeah. No, I know what you mean.
We haven't said that yet, but I've never said that about any of these other ones, and I may not the rest of the time. Maybe when we get to like the first Blood movie or something, where there's a few of them, but this is one that I don't think he could have made a better film than what they did in the aftermath of it. I'm sorry.
I too have royal blue balls from this as well. It's that middle of the road. It's, I really would like to see what it would have looked like, his version. Because, like I said, it's a standalone. It's 1960s. It's a completely different version than what we have today. So there's a part of me that's kind of like, I wonder what that would look like and what that would have been like. But like you, and I don't mean to be mean to any of our UK listeners. This is not a spit in your face type thing. Just Bond was not as big a thing. I mean, it played over all the time. Like TNT or whoever had it. Like there was always a Bond thing. And I've watched quite a few of them. Marathon. It just wasn't my cup of tea, so to speak, back then. And no offense to any of them. It just wasn't my thing. I love Sean Connery, but I just wasn't, you know, I was like, okay, these are fun and cute movies, but they're more fun for some of the things that people say and some of the quips and some of the funny names that they gave the women. But I was never just like, another Bond film.
They're too aware.
And I would go see some of the ones as they came out. Like I saw some of the Pierce Brosnan ones. And the best thing about the Pierce Brosnan one was the great video game for GoldenEye we got for fucking Nintendo. I know that might be sacrilegious someplace, but that was one of the best first-person shooters to ever come out. But when Daniel Craig came on the scene and I remember going to see this film, I was like, okay, now we're playing in the right sandbox.
We had talked about it, and I think the thing that got me excited about this film wasn't the fact that it was Daniel Craig, but it was post-Layer Cake Daniel Craig.
Yes,
and if anyone hasn't seen that movie as well, it's fucking great, and he is so good in it.
Yes.
And you're watching this in the theater, and it had just been announced that he was going to be James Bond, and a lot of people went to see that movie because of it, because it was like, who the fuck is Daniel Craig? And then, oh, wow, and he's amazing in in the film. And that's what pumped up the blue balls for that, you know, or, you know,
yes,
for that. So,
and he was spectacular. He had the look. The whole opening scene, everything was just spectacular. He was great throughout. And again, Daniel Craig's career took off because of that. And we may not get some of the Glass Onion, some of the Knives Out movies that we get, and some of the other stuff he's been a part of. And as much as I love Tarantino, I'm with you. I think he would have done an amazing job with his standalone, but it wouldn't have helped the Bond franchise by any stretch of imagination. And the Bond franchise really took off. And this is a fucking spectacular movie. And I thought it was always going to be the best until fucking Skyfall came out. And they're the two best in the series. And I will die on that hill. I don't fucking care. Those are the two best.
The Brosnan ones I found even boring, and they needed a shot in the arm. They needed to be modernized to be able to stand up to these other movies at the box office. And it's just like everybody keeps upping the ante. And I'm wondering after this John Wick stuff, like, where do they go from here with this stuff? And the Bond stuff was
slap fights.
Slap fights.
Thumb wrestling to the death.
Come here, John Wick. Just stop cheating. I can just imagine maybe some leg wrestling.
Some tickle fights. All right, well, so there you have it. The level of disappointment for this episode, for us both, is a wince-inducing throb. Now, please reach out to us on our socials and let us know what level of blue balls Tarantino has left you with since the announcement of this project nearly 20 years ago.
I'd actually wanted to do Casino Royale as a movie. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do Casino Royale as a movie, which was the very first Bond novel done, and it's never really truly been done. There was this like ridiculous vaudeville version of it. Right. That's not the book, but it's like probably the smallest story in all of the James Bond novels. It's the first novel. He's like kind of a cold-blooded guy at the end of it. The last line of the book is he kills the woman he loves, and he calls up Control and says, "The bitch is dead." And that's the last line of the book. And it's very, I mean, it's all about a baccarat game, and it's like, I'm so sick of the way they've done it. And it's not Pierce Brosnan. And Michelle Yeoh was really cool in it, actually. And Pierce Brosnan was good in it. But it's like, I so don't care about that. I'd like to see something new. But if it does great, then fine. You know, apparently that, you know, if you didn't, maybe you did that, then no one would like, why isn't there a motorcycle chase? I would do Casino Royale, like, for the first time, actually. I would do Casino Royale if I could do it. The only problem with like doing it with Pierce Brosnan as part of the franchise, because they own it, is I would actually like to do it in the 60s. I would take place in 1964, and it wouldn't have the same format as a James Bond movie, and it would have narration. I would want it to be like the book.
I heard talk a few years ago that maybe you were considering doing a Bond movie.
Well, you know, I gotta say, that was one that I was very interested in doing.
Well, wouldn't that be great? Can you imagine a Quentin Tarantino Bond movie?
Yeah, well, I mean, but part of the thing is, the reason they did Casino Royale all comes down to me. Because,
well, why don't you just big yourself up while you're
here? Well, it's the truth. I mean, the thing about it is, I made it a point that I said I wanted to do Casino Royale. They were already on record as saying that the movie was unfilmable. But then after I said it and talked about it for a little bit, then the big thing on all the internets was that was what the fans wanted to see. And so that's when they, maybe it's not so unfilmable now.
Well, I told him to hire Daniel Craig.
Actually, if I would have done it, though, I wouldn't have done it with Daniel Craig. I would have done it with Pierce Brosnan.
Well, that's what you want.
I disagree.
Well, you're wrong twice, didn't
you? And that's a wrap on our latest episode of Inglourious Blue Balls. I would once again like to thank my co-host, Friar Wheeler, for joining me on this daunting journey through the vast jungle of unrealized project announcements from our Lord and Savior, Quentin Tarantino. Now, you can find the links to all of Friar Wheeler's endeavors in the show notes. And as always, you can become a member of the Church of Tarantino by following us on all of our socials. Those links can be found in our show notes as well. Now, if you'd be so kind and take a moment to like, review, subscribe, and follow us, the Church would greatly appreciate it, as it will help other fellow Tarantino fans like yourself find the show. So be sure to join me again next week as Austin Kennedy, co-host of the Film Geek Time Machine podcast, and Joe Fordyce, host of the Flyers Talk podcast, join me to help celebrate our Lord and Savior Quentin Tarantino's 61st birthday. So until then, I'm the Reverend Scott Kay. May Tarantino be with you always.
This has been a Man with an Exceptional Beard production.